This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Breaking down the game in a fanatic, obsessive, bordering on unhealthy manner. This is Leafs Nation Postgame on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Centering pass, they score! Boone Jenner gets the second crack at it. 2-0 in favor of the Blue Jackets.
Yeah, there goes that cannon right after Joe Bowen with the call. Of course, Oshawa General fans will be happy to hear that. Boone Jenner making a 2-0 for the Columbus Blue Jackets' eighth goal of the year. But Leaf fans won't, and they won't be happy with it all. Anything that happened tonight, a 5-0 win for the Columbus Blue Jackets over the Toronto Maple Leafs. We welcome you to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealer, Sportsdelic Mark Osborne, here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. We welcome those been listening to Toronto Blue Jay action. Tough night for Leafs and Blue Jay fans. The Jays blowing it at the end against the New York Yankees. The Toronto Raptors, though, Ozzie, come up with a win against Charlotte, so we're 1-for-3.
Wow, Gord, I thought you were going to talk to me about Aaron Loop's effort in the eighth inning. That's where we're going to start this show. That's where it ended up after the first period.
Okay, so we're saying that the Jays at least had some drama and had a lead. For the Toronto Maple Leafs, they seemed to be toiling around good enough in the first period.
Yeah, 10 minutes. 10 minutes, things were looking pretty good. And then, I thought, here we go. Wow, spirited effort once
three
again.
Three goals in 5 minutes and 9 seconds. Here we go again.
Yeah, you know, and by the way, at the start of the show, I do take issue because all you said, well, Oshawa General fans, because that's local, right? You're talking about in the listening audience. So you're not actually mentioning, you know, Anisimov from Moscow Spartak.
But who scored the goal?
Yeah. Boone Jenner.
I know.
That was the second goal of the game. What about the first goal?
Well, no, but what was the clip?
Maybe we got some listening audience in Russia.
I would think we do.
Oh, it was Joe Bowen.
Yeah,
oh,
that's the call.
That's the call.
Okay, gotcha. When Anisimov comes back next break, I'll let you extol his virtues.
Okay? Well, you know what? I was hoping that you would allow me to go through the first five goals, and I can tell you exactly the breakdowns and why they happened. But
okay, let's do that.
No.
Okay,
no.
First of all, I want to mention to those, and again, I welcome you to Leafs Nation postgame. Our phone line's open at 870-0590. Star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. And I know with the Jays, it's about looking ahead 160 games. With the Maple Leafs, really, it's as much looking back on 81 games. But if you want to get in, again, 870-0590, star 590 on your cell phone network, 1-888-666-0590. We'll update you on the out-of-town score, some interesting games going on there. We'll hear from Maple Leaf head coach Peter Horacek. What can he say to the guys tonight? I mean, I just... He's a guy, as I mentioned, I knew a bit before, I like. And if the day he and Brendan Shanahan or whoever, Dave Nonis, talked about the job and you picked a best-case scenario and you picked a worst-case scenario, I don't even think this would have made the worst-case scenario.
You know what? Here's what you could probably say to Peter Horacek. Peter, your pregame speech reminded the players of your first win as a Maple Leaf head coach. And they thought we're playing that same team that was the Columbus Blue Jackets. Back, was it at the beginning of January? Yes, it was the beginning of January. Well,
about the middle, after the road trip.
When this club was decimated by injuries, and yet they started to play much, much better. Because what you saw tonight out of this Columbus Blue Jackets team and the run that they've been on in their last, what, how many hockey games? What, they're 9-0-1 in their last 10 games.
Wow.
And they are a very good team. There's a lot to like about the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I was mentioning this to you, to Matt Brown, a producer off air, is what in the world was Hextall thinking about Umberger for Scotty Hartnell? Like Scotty Hartnell is a gamer. He's got jam. What does he have? 27 goals. And anyways, it was a money issue there in Philadelphia. Nonetheless, the season that Johansson has had, Nick Foligno, my goodness, a 30-goal year. And then some of their supporting cast members of whether it's Cam Atkinson, Matt Calvert, Boone Jenner. It's a good team. They're a very, very good team. And I think the Maple Leafs, for the first 10 minutes, were right with them. And then all of a sudden, I don't know if Columbus just decided to put it to another level, but down low, their ability to cycle a puck, and the Leafs' Achilles heel is they've never learned to defend. And when that Phil Kessel, Bozak, James Van Riemsdyk line is out there in their own end, and you've got a bunch of forwards that are like it looked like summer hockey for a few shifts out there. After that first goal, I think they reverted back to their old ways, the team, and thought, oh boy, here we go again. And yeah, that's what it looked like for the rest of the night.
Yeah, just looking, so Kessel and company just minus one tonight. I'm not saying that's the be-all and end-all, but the plus-minus indicator. And, you know, here we are, and we'll chat more about it as we look ahead towards next year. But all of a sudden, this chasm, and we picked the Toronto Maple Leafs to make the playoffs. That wasn't a stupid prediction at the start of the year. And Randy Carlyle was fired when the team was in a playoff spot, and Peter Horchuk was not hired to tank. Peter Horchuk was hired because they thought that would help get them to the finish line in a better way by playing a more defensively responsible system. So all of a sudden, you're looking from the start of the year, the Leafs making the playoffs, being in the playoffs and those benchmarks you're supposed to be. U.S. Thanksgiving, for example, you got like a 95% history or 90%. They two years in a row, the Leafs have bucked the trend. So maybe 1 out of 10, it'll help them get Connor McDavid, because 1 out of 10 both years, which is really 1 out of 100 to do 2 years, they've fallen short.
I know, Gordon, but you know what? You and I are not the kind of guys that, you know, once we do say something, we don't backtrack and then said, no, we didn't say that. I like to stick to my principles based on what we thought was occurring at the start of the year, based on some of the acquisitions in the off season. There was a lot to like, I think, about this team. We weren't talking about them being Stanley Cup bound. We were talking about them making this next step and going back to last year and how things unraveled, that they were capable and talented enough to be a playoff team. And they were a playoff team until they fired Randy Carlyle. And so now the things that still remained in question has only been further magnified to the point where it's a blessing in disguise, believe it or not. If that's possible to say that this, what we've seen, is going to finally bring about change in this organization, that's the only hope that this fan base has to pin anything on moving forward.
But how?
Because what would change? What would change if you kept the core group of this team together? Yeah, they've got talent, but I don't think anything's going to change.
Okay, look in Alberta. Look at Edmonton. Look at what almost 2 years ago Craig McTavish talked about, bold changes. And he did Bo Diddley.
Hey, they're still keeping that core together. They said they're coming. They're still young. They're still coming.
But he talked about bold changes till he found out it's hard to make bold changes. And that's so I don't know
what. Or get a goalie.
Okay, but I don't, like the blessing in disguise thing, I know this has sort of been, you know, trumpeted by the backers of Brendan Shanahan that we're going to do it right for a change. But no, the blessing in disguise would have been to figure out when you should have figured out all these things that are lacking. That, you know what, when guys don't
work. That's the only thing I can hope for. The only thing that I can hope for is not only the management team, there are capable people within that organization. The only part of this organization that you and I are questioning really comes down to the president. Pure and simple. I might as well say it as it is. You know what? I think there's great people in that organization, good people. But good people, as you know, being one that was in charge, is you need somebody to be clearly, definitely in charge.
Right.
That has experience, that has a game plan, that knows exactly how he wants to build this team. That's not Dave Nonis. He's not the guy in charge. Brendan Shanahan is the guy in charge, but Brendan Shanahan has zippo experience except for this season. Has he scouted? Does he know anything about scouting? Does he know anything about evaluating? What kind of a team does he want to build? Brendan Shanahan was a great player, Hall of Famer. I wish that Brendan Shanahan was playing on this team. That's what this team needs, is a Brendan Shanahan on the ice. And again, we've got to give him an opportunity, I guess.
Well, he's brought
And that's
in,
what we're going to do.
Well, the other part, okay, brings in Mark Hunter. And
you like that?
Well, I think everybody likes that. But what exactly that's going to mean remains to be seen. Putting together strong junior teams is great experience, but it's not the same as putting together a strong NHL team. Doesn't mean he can't do
well,
it at all.
You know what, though? If you're decided to build and starting at this year's draft, having a guy like Mark Hunter that has already been out there and you've already acquired a couple of players, and plus all of these players that are going to be drafted, you've seen those players since they were 14, 15, 16 years of age. You should have a good handle on this group of 18-year-olds as to what direction you want to take this team based on how you've built your junior teams and the things that you like in players. So that speaks for itself for Mark Hunter at the junior level. And I think that that should translate into this next level. And granted, he's going to have a year under his belt, or almost a year, from watching this organization, seeing a lot of the players that he saw in junior now become pro hockey players. And what's that transition been like, right? Because that takes time to watch those guys, right? Like, a guy could be a great junior player, but doesn't materialize at this next level.
But that's why I'm wondering, Mark Hunter, seeing a guy at 14, 15 years old, really does it matter now? Like, does it matter?
I think it absolutely does matter. I think you gain experience.
Oh, no, about molding him as far as his skill set goes. I just mean the opinion of Mark Osborne as a 15-year-old means nothing to me once he's 21.
Well, unless you were, and go back in time, excuse me, with Mark Hunter, when he was scouting the Corey Perrys of the world, when he was scouting the David Bolins of the world, you know what I'm saying? Those players who were minor midgets that then made the jump and or that he drafted that have since made their way to the National Hockey League level. He's got a good handle on those kind of players
developed. I want more the Anaheim scout that argued about taking Corey Perry not as a top 10 pick, right?
Right.
He was a middle first round pick. Just like the Quebec Nordiques, for example, taking Joe Sakic, whatever it was, 15th overall. I mean, that's what I want as much as anything. I just every single guy that's come to the organization, and I'm glad you make Brendan accountable, because I'm a little annoyed that he gets kind of a bye by certain guys that I guess get to talk to him in the media, in that he came to town, his ass was kissed for 2 days. Everyone's questioned, what's Brendan going to do? Very unrealistic and unfair, but that's the kind of excitement he brought. Kyle Dubas comes to town, a press conference for an assistant general manager being hired. Unparalleled in the National Hockey League, you'd have a presser about the assistant GM. Very positive, very novel, a bold move, young guy, different way of looking at things. Mark Hunter gets hired. Same thing, you know, just for what you talk about. And I don't quibble with any of those three things as far as they're getting the trumpets, you know, blaring positives coming to town. But look at the crap we have now.
Okay, wait a minute.
And they've all been a part of it to a small degree in the erosion.
Okay, so then case in point, come next week, come Monday, okay? So Brendan Shanahan has basically 5 days to then address everybody on Monday with some kind of a communication, some kind of a plan, some kind of an apology, some kind of whatever. Like,
Who are you talking about addressing? The fans or who?
I think addressing everybody. I think with a concrete, legitimate form of communicating, a plan, a direction for this particular organization moving ahead. Qualifying or talking about the season that was, the disaster that it was, and whatever his exit meetings are with the players, is I think he owes it to be communicative to Leaf Nation and the rest of the media.
Certainly.
Clearly. On where this direction or this organization is moving forward. That's the only bit of confidence that you and I will have, is listening to Brendan Shanahan, because Dave Nonis is not going to do it. It's Brendan Shanahan. And Brendan Shanahan needs to start communicating a lot more effectively and a lot clearer in order for the rest of us to have a little bit of support or to feel positive about this organization moving ahead.
Well, and the other one is, and he's got some apologists who'll say, it's not a big deal he doesn't live here. I think it's a real big deal. I think it's fine once you have the success Glenn Sather did, then you can go live in West Palm Beach like Sather did all those years, or spend most of your time. I go back to the example, and you were gone by then, but you came back a second time. I'm using Cliff Fletcher back in 1991. And Cliff had been with the Atlanta Calgary Flames for 19 years. His first year in Toronto, it wasn't a very good team. And he wasn't the fun guy that he usually is. But he was there because he was trying to figure it out, get to know it. You grab 5 minutes with a player. You grab 5 minutes with an assistant coach. This, that, whatever. And, I mean, if this is catching everybody by surprise, then you got to be around the team more. Like, you really got to get around and figure out the entire. I don't mean you got to hang in the dressing room every single minute in that. But there's just a lot of things that, and hey, Brendan Shannon's a Hall of Famer. So better, you know, he's the guy in charge. So it doesn't matter about anybody else doing because we don't make the decisions. But obviously this went horribly awry. The 18-wheeler didn't go off the road. It has stayed off the road. It would get back for a little bit and we would get excited because it looked like it was corrected. It should have driven off the cliff back then. Mm-hmm. Should have driven off the cliff and done it. So it didn't. But that's all I'm saying. I expect more from him and the management group that way. You've had your mulligan for a year. I expect no more surprises about lacking character and other things to guys that were inked to long-term contracts by him or others.
Okay, so come next week, there might be a clearer direction. There might be a simpler form of communication because one thing that we've come to learn is Brendan doesn't want to do a lot of talking, rightly or wrongly. That's his decision, whether you think it should be more, whether I think the optics of where he has sat or whether you think he should be living here and all that kind of stuff is immaterial at the end of the day as to an effective moving forward of this organization with either a manager, the players you draft, and the coach that you hire. That's when you're going to start to see some kind of an effect in the summertime. And any of the other stuff is gobbledygook. It means nothing because it's all chatter. It's all what we've been hearing from Peter Horacek and from the players for the last 3 months. It means nothing. It's too much talk.
And let me make it clear, because I've been on both sides, mm-hmm. and there's different styles and way different eras. But I'm not talking about, he doesn't come on our show. I don't care. It'd be nice to have him. I more mean we're the vehicle for the public. That's the point. We're the vehicle for the Leafs fans. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, you put requests in before and there's no's and that's fine. Or you get the odd time request and they say, because they're owned by two media giants. Well, if he does you, he's going to have to do the other media guy, TSN at some point, whatever. Or he was on Primetime Sports a week ago Sunday I wouldn't be on Sunday. You know, that kind of stuff. So, you know, enough crap.
Yeah, fine. So that's been very disappointing.
Yeah, it is. So we get Luke Robitaille in LA a few times. You know, we get Trevor Linden. We get a lot of general managers from other teams. We get Mike Babcock. Fine. No, which we've done. That's fine. That's not wow, wow, wow. I just, you know, that's true. That's it. That's fine if they don't want to do it. But I just mean the fan out there, whether it's the Fan 590, whether it's the other radio station, the TV, the newspapers, just talking. I mean, there's a lot of great fans out there. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of great fans out there. You know, just they bought Peter Horacek's thing about the 555. When Shanahan got hired, when Kyle Dubas got hired, and to a lesser extent, Mark Hunter got hired, they embraced them all. Like they're full on and full in the average, you know, the average, I say loyal, whatever the word may be, but diehard Toronto Maple Leaf fan, non-wingnut. How about that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'm just saying, that's what I'm just, when I'm talking about, I'm talking just like you are. I'm not just saying like I care as much about being a media guy.
I think this organization is going to look back on this year and in hindsight or being reflected or whatever and saying, man, we made a lot more dumb decisions or poor choices, or we wish we would have handled or did things different. I can certainly appreciate and understand that. There's been a lot of change here in the last year since Tim Lewicki hired Brendan Shanahan, since the PR department was let go, and the list goes on and on.
Assistant coaches, assistant
general managers, and even the setup of the lunchroom and the media lounge, you know, like things are just different. And the result and the end result has been worse. So at the end of the day, I think everybody at MLSC is, you know, got their tails between their legs, and rightly so. It's been a humiliating type of year, but you can be humiliated. You can feel all those things. You can feel sorry for yourself, or you can actually do the work, take your lumps and move ahead and do the best that you can with a clear, authoritative plan and confidence moving ahead. And there's no other approach that you can take. And the players need to understand that too. A part of the problem here is the players don't feel confident at all because they don't know who's in charge. Is this GM here? Is this coach here? The answer is no. The answer is no. So they're looking around waiting for something to happen. They are looking for something to happen. And we'll see where this all happens or how it happens.
Okay, and the next CEO, you've done the business guy in Richard Petty, and Tom Anselmi had it for a little while, and that's fine. You know, they did great jobs for Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, the company. Tim Lewicki was, you let a guy in that's built these seats for good luck selling them. You know, that's a challenge now with the soccer team because he said you can turn it around with a couple of signings. And I wish them well. I hope they do well, but that's going to be a challenge. But he was going to take down all the history. He said, I'm going to take down, we don't need the old history. We're going to make our new history. And then he said, I'm going to get out of town. And at least he did listen about keeping up some of those pictures and other things. So get a CEO that has some hockey savviness and enough to leave the president alone.
Absolutely.
But, you know, just don't.
No, you know, because that was a poor, poor decision, and it left a sour taste in so many people. He put his foot in his mouth.
Well, you don't need another American whiz-bang guy. Just Absolutely. Get somebody that knows, that has common sense, please, okay? That's what we'll do. We'll come back and talk about that. We'll try to talk some more common sense. We'll chat about a 5-0 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Leafs Nation postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Stellick and Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Talk about tonight's game until you're blue in the face. Leafs Nation postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Brought out in center now by the Jackets out of the wing, and a shot scores! Scott Hartnell coming off the bench, down the left wing, a right-handed shot, and he kicks the corner. It's 3-0.
We welcome you back to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stellick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And I don't like to get engaged in Twitter world. It's always interesting. Now, I'm at Gord Stellick. Your handle's what? At what's yours, Ozzy?
Mark Osborne, 21.
And what was the one we just got?
We got an interesting one. A couple of them. Interesting, you know, saying that you had an embarrassingly jealous rant. So they heard us talking about our frustration and everything, and kind of described it as a rant.
Okay.
And so the first time that Leaf Nation actually has a front office who has an intelligent front office that's stats friendly, and us two hate it. So we hate the stats friendly front office that the Maple Leafs now employ.
Darren Millard, of course, joining us, had the game on Sportsnet tonight, and got to see him earlier today. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed doing the piece, Darren, with brother Bob, just trying to reflect on the 1980s compared to this year.
Remember the question I asked you?
You asked me a couple.
Is this
the worst? Yeah.
Than the 80s? Do you want to change your answer?
No. It is worse than the 80s in that in the 80s, you started the season knowing exactly the predicament you were in. So it wasn't like the rules changed on January, February. And yeah. I mentioned that you guys like Gary Lehman and Stevie Thomas, for example, were guys that emerged as real NHL players. And you knew that. You saw that. And here we're debating about Nazem Kadri and, you know, all those other things. So it's, to me, it was it's far worse hockey-wise now than it was any of those years. What do you think?
I think it's worse now, too. But I here's why. One of the reasons, the major contributing factors, is in the 80s, you had Harold. And you could always just slough it off as
absolutely
a crazy guy. But yeah. If we didn't have him, it would be totally normal. And you can't say that now. There's the Maple Leaf Sports is a $1 billion industry. And with super executives, the elite, running the show. So you can't just say that it's some aging loony guy running the show. So I think now things should be more in control. Things should be more on the rails and less of this type of atmosphere.
Darren, Gord and I were having this debate. Hi, oh, hey, Darren. We were having this debate a little bit, and some would qualify it as a bit of a rant, and you know, us complaining and whining and all that kind of stuff. But I'm going to ask you this question on what your thoughts are, because, you know, again, the way that Brendan Shanahan has chosen to go about his business is certainly his prerogative. And I've mentioned this to Gord. It may not be the way that I would have done it or the lack thereof of communication. But at the end of this season, what is your expectation of what Brendan either owes the public or what is his tack is going to be come next Monday or Tuesday as he addresses the media? Are you going to be any more confident based on what he says? And what the Leaf fans, I guess, owe us as far as giving some kind of a hope moving forward?
Well, I think it's going to totally depend on what he says, and he will address the media. For those that are wondering why they haven't seen Brendan Shanahan more, this was predetermined. This was his game plan all along, was to come in and be very under the radar from a media perspective, almost the alternative to what Brian Burke put forward, and simply evaluate. And he didn't change, even with the season disappearing. And he did a halfway report with the media, but he didn't change the way he worked and did his business with the media. So I think it's slightly unfair to criticize his lack of media exposure, media presence, when whether they were winning or losing, that was his game plan. Now, what does he say on Tuesday or Monday? First things first, how quickly do they pull the trigger on the coach and make that decision? And then what's the game plan for Dave Nonis? What are his plans with management and his hockey club? Because he's had this year to evaluate it, and he's had a full year to evaluate it because he was hired before the start of the playoffs last year. And now I think after 12 months, I think the Toronto Maple Leaf fans are justified in expecting some kind of report, evaluation, what he's seen, and then a game plan of how he plans to fix it.
Okay, so
yes,
nobody is out, nor should they be, out after Brendan Shanahan's head in any way, shape, or form. I was saying who couldn't have been more positively received than he was, than Kyle Dubas was, than Mark Hunter's hiring, which was lower key, was. And nobody's really changed on that, but the year to evaluate, I understand that. But before, if you're in the NHL, if you're a media guy now, and you get transferred to another market, for example, you know a little bit about the other 29 teams. I mean, you're not in a cave. You know, so the evaluation thing, it's not like it started at zero. There's somewhere you start knowing what you did and then having the off season to whether, you know, talk about things, look at things, review things, look at video. Like to me, there's an element that you could be a little bit more up to speed September 1st.
Well, I think it's fair to be to have your own opinion on it. I just want to. I'm just passing along the message that this was his game plan, whether they won or they lost. He was going to do this.
So I don't care about the media thing. I'm just saying the team, and evaluating the team.
Well, they did. I guess he did evaluate the team in the sense that he fired the coach. He made a move there.
Did he make a move to tank or make the playoffs?
I don't think at all that there was a conscious decision to tank and miss the playoffs.
Agreed.
Because the way they went about this, if you're going to tank and you're going to miss the playoffs, you don't get off to the kind of start that they did. You don't go into the season with Randy Carlyle as your coach because he's never going to buy into that. So he would have quit, or he would have been fired because of a difference of opinion. So I think, as plainly as I can put it, they dropped out of the playoff picture because they're a bad hockey team, and maybe they've got more skill than other teams. But when it comes to putting those players together, they don't create a good hockey team, and that's why character, gumption, and skill, and determination, work ethic, and leadership all comes together, and they've got skill. There's several players on that team that I think are really good hockey players, but when you add in all the other attributes, they're missing a lot of the ancillary parts of it.
Darren, what about from a player's perspective? And I know everybody is kind of sitting around wondering what the personnel is going to look like come the off season when the puck drops in September and all of that kind of stuff. Do you think it's imperative that Brendan Shanahan and his management team effectively establish the leadership, the leadership group, so that the players can actually then just concentrate on playing hockey? Because I think, quite frankly, the way a lot of things have been handled this year, that I don't think the players inside that dressing room really know what the direction of the organization is. And I think that's really important.
In what way, Mark?
Well, I just don't think that they really probably have a vote of confidence knowing, like, is Dave Nonis in charge? Is this management team approach? And maybe that's just the way that the nature of this organization is going to move forward, and the players have to get used to liking that.
Well, let me what about when Phil Kessel in his rant about Dion Phaneuf said, Dion's not responsible for putting this team together. It kind of slipped out.
I'll agree with you on that part, and the players wondering exactly what the game plan is when they fired Randy Carlyle. And I realized that they were in contention for a playoff spot at the time, but they were reeling. They were starting down this path of you could see it happening all over again, like the previous 3 years. But now I can see this is why I can see the players thinking the way that that Mark just portrayed is because they put Peter Horacek and Steve Spott as the co-coaches for the first couple of days. Then they gave Peter Horacek the interim head coaching job for the rest of the season. If you're serious about fixing this thing mid-season, you're bringing in another coach. You're bringing in a guy that you feel can take the reins, whether it's Dan Bylsma or Adam Oates or whoever you had your sights set on. I think that they, once they saw things going south and they fired Randy, that they decided at that point that it was it wasn't fixable.
Yeah,
to make any type of playoff run.
And Darren, I don't even think that they had enough confidence to unequivocally make a real good determination to say, you know what, this is who we're hiring because we're waiting. If they wanted to get Dan Bylsma and they were convinced that was the guy, he would have made that decision saying, we're going to stop this leaking ship and we're going to turn things around. Yeah, they would have done it. So
I don't think they made a conscious decision to tank, but they definitely didn't give the players the message that they're in it to fix it and make the playoffs. So I could see that where the players were questioning that a little bit. Yeah.
Darren Millard joining Gord Stellick and Mark Osborne on Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. A 5-0 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets tonight. Why don't you relay a bit, and Ozzie picked up on it, your chat with Kipper after Elliot Friedman's interview with Scott Hartnell about, you know, Dion Phaneuf being the lightning rod. We saw Zach Sill had some footage about chirping Dion when he was a member of the Pittsburgh Penguins, and what Scotty Hartnell had to say, and then Nick's answer to your question.
Well, pregame, Elliot Friedman sat down with Scott Hartnell, who is one of the best beakers in the National Hockey League. I wouldn't say he's a trash talker, but he can bring it when it comes to beaking, and he's always had a thing for going after Dion Phaneuf. And Elliot asked him, who's the best player that you enjoy getting under the skin the most? And he said, it's Scott. I'm decent friends with Scotty. And I thought it was great when he said, he didn't try and shy away from it, but said, Neon Dion. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like he said Dion Phaneuf or Toronto's captain. It was in his own cheeky, beaky style. And then we showed them a warm up. They were Scotty went right over to him, center ice red line, and was chirping him. And Dion got up and skated away. And maybe he was just done stretching, or maybe he just didn't feel like listening to Scott anymore. And I asked Nick, what should Dion do? He knows he's playing Scott. He knows that Hartnell is going to come at him with some verbal jabs. What should he do? Should he have some lines prepared or what have you? And Nick said he should drop them. He should just turn around and drop them. And I thought that was interesting. Now I know that Dion's got the bad hand, but yeah, they played each other numerous times over the years and he's never tried to drop them. So that's the way Nick would treat somebody that's running around and chirping you. But we certainly haven't seen that from Dion. And the way Scott said it in the interview, Neon Dion, was a sign that there's not a ton of really respect there, guy to guy, player to player, I should say.
Yeah. Further to Gord's point here, Darren, my final question, we'll keep it on the Dion Phaneuf topic
here. And by the way, just before we go further, I love guys like Scotty Hartnell, mm-hmm. who can just are creative and can come up with it. Getting into those chirp fests, I think it's awesome.
And what's there not to like about a guy like Scotty Hartnell, who's been a 30-goal guy, 27 this year, is going to bring it, talk it, go to the front of the net, all sorts of things. You'd love to have him on the team. And That's one of the things I said to Gord, is I was really perplexed on the trade that I guess Ron Hextall would have made in bringing Umberger on and maybe getting rid of term in his contract.
Yeah, they saved some term.
Yeah, so they saved term. So just getting back in my final question in regards to Dion, Gord has always said that at the end of the season or moving into the summer that this is going to be a humanitarian decision to move Dion Phaneuf out of this organization. Would you agree with that? And that's just a matter of time as Dion does find himself in a new jersey next year?
Look, if you're going to make a humanitarian decision, then give Peter Horacek a 3-year extension and tell him to go like rent him a place in the Bahamas. If anybody deserves some kind of humanitarian award.
No, I'm starting out as a hockey. I'm starting it as a hockey decision, but I said for like humanitarian reasons. Now I think even Dion's called uncle. Okay. A number of weeks ago.
Oh, I agree. Dion believed he was being traded at trade deadline. Mm-hmm. He was, he had heard all the scuttlebutt and he knew that that was a realistic possibility. And trust me when I say this, there may not have been another player in the NHL who paid more attention to what was happening and going down on trade deadline day when it came to the actual hockey business. I know there's some other stuff about that day, but when it came to being traded, then Dion Phaneuf, he thought that he was on his way out. I think he'll be moved. I think that he's a player that can be moved. I think that there's ways to use Dion Phaneuf. So I think come Saturday night, he's played his last game as a Maple Leaf.
Well, I know it's the last Wednesday night hockey. You've been doing the Leaf games as well as the Wednesday night package. But I know one of the exciting things, unfortunately, it won't include the Toronto Maple Leafs, but having all the playoff action. So it's going to be a busy few months and certainly a very fast and furious first 2 weeks for guys like you.
We are looking forward. That was fun today, hanging out with Brother Bob. Like, you guys are, we throw a lot of jabs back and forth, the three of us, to each other. But that was a lot of fun to sit and just listen to you and Bob. Although the worst fake talkers of all time, you guys sitting there trying to look like you were having a legitimate conversation as we went to break.
Yeah,
well, terrible.
Yeah, I know. I got to learn Jamie Campbell. He's the best fake talker going to break.
Ozzy, you know what they did? That the first two times we did it, because we recorded that, they sat there having a fake conversation, but they didn't look at each other. They were like literally almost looking the other way.
I know. I just caught the tail.
Are you guys brothers?
Yeah. I was like a marriage. Just don't look. Just at it.
I really appreciate being on with you guys. And if Peter Horacek gets a humanitarian award, I think he should share it with you too.
I appreciate you twisting the content of the question. And I'll look forward to some more tweets about how jealous and what a rage I'm on and everything else. So we'll look forward to better things next year. And hopefully, I mean, let's face it, to be blunt, for our package here at the radio station, TV, the best thing is the Leafs being there. I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
It is, just is.
Exactly.
And I'm a Leaf fan. I am. That doesn't change. I'm in the media side. It's different than when you're a kid or different than when you're working at it. So it's disappointing. And hopefully next year it'll include them.
Listen, at Gord Stellick and at Mark Osborne 21, it's a pleasure.
Okay. Thank you, at Millard.
Great.
Aaron Millard joining us, of course, from Sportsnet. And he was doing tonight's game along with Nick Kyprios and Darren Pang, Doug McLean, their usual Wednesday night
nice,
crew.
Nice jacket that they gave Doug for winning that, what is it called?
Yeah, the Wisers thing about the contest, about you.
Point of view? Or
point of view, and then people vote as you do it, going back and forth, back and forth.
It almost looked like one of those Hockey Night in Canada jackets from way back.
That's what they said. You know, those were those powder blue jackets. And Mark Askin, who's one of the big producers there, he just said, you know, back in the 70s, 80s, that was like, it got you entrance everywhere. Security was very different back then. So the lowest guy on that, you know, working there, who just ran stuff, he had the powder blue jacket, could get anywhere.
Hey, one of our coaches, Doug Carpenter, had a jacket that color. In fact, a suit that color. And we started making reference to that being Carpy wear. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was bad. It was polyester. It was the lowest of Lowe's, and who would dare wear a suit that looked like you were an usher behind the bench? Well, maybe sometimes it felt like that behind the bench.
One more Harold Ballard one was, we flew to watch game 7 of the St. Catharines Saints play the Rochester Americans, game 7 playoffs. And the centers were pretty good. Bruce Boudreaux, Mike Kosicki, and Normie Oben, you know, three pretty good centers on our St. Catharines team. Didn't win, lost that game. And, we're sitting there in Rochester, and Mr. Ballard's looking. Doug, you have to go across the ice. And, you know, you saw Doug Carpenter. He didn't really know who he was, but he knew he was a minor league coach. He never saw any games in that. And he goes, his wardrobe threw him off. He said, he doesn't look like a coach. So when Carpy's name came up,
yep.
looking for, like, as prospective next coaches of the Toronto Maple Leafs, was a big no. Kibosh heralds one memory about it. So you're right. Doug Carpenter, people cat, he was legendary for the terrible suits, yep. Herb Darlick suits almost.
And you know what? Although that year that he did coach us, which was a very good year offensively.
89-90,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, that was a year Gary scored 51 goals. And, yeah, it was a fun year. And, you know, there were some other things that went on. But, nonetheless, it wasn't long before the start of that next season that we were traded and he was fired. And on came another chapter of
history. I know. And the fear was that Eric Lindros was going to be the pick that the New Jersey Devils would use from the Toronto Maple Leafs for the Tom Curvers trade.
Oh, it ended up being Scott Niedermayer.
I know. Much, much better. So just the one quick, let's look at the scores. We'll take a break in about a minute. But a huge game tonight as far as, you know, Boston-Washington goes. So tell us what happened there as the Washington Capitals certainly make things interesting.
Well, they certainly do. It was 3-0 was the final score for Washington over the Boston Bruins. Two goals by the Caps in the first period. John Carlson, his 12th. Matty Niskanen, his 4th. That was 7 minutes and 6 seconds into the game. And then in the second period, Marcus Johansson with goal number 20. So that was all she wrote for Washington. The 3-0 shutout victory for Holtby. And lo and behold, as far as the standings go, that evens things up as far as games played between the Bruins and the Ottawa Senators. The Penguins sit 1 point ahead of both of those teams. And I do believe Boston plays in Florida tomorrow night. And do you know who the Sens end up finishing off with as well as Pittsburgh? Do you know those games at all?
Do you have them all handy?
No, I don't.
That will get them.
I'm sorry. I thought maybe you would know that. Because
Dallas
you're a
and Anaheim. I was ready to give my nothing score with Dallas and Anaheim in the first period. We'll come back and talk more about the schedule and other things going. Let's hear from Toronto Maple Leaf head coach. We talked about if anybody deserves a humanitarian 3-year contract. Here's Peter Horachuk after tonight's 5-0 loss.
Peter, is it a frustrating night? And maybe that's an understatement when your club just doesn't seem to have an answer for what they were able to throw at you people tonight.
Well, that's the way they play. They play hard every game. That's why, you know, they're a hard team to play against, and they won the games they won, especially in the recent times when they've got healthier. And our team wasn't prepared to start the game and play the same way they were. And so it goes down to that. You know, I got a little better in the third later on, and the game's already out of hand, and, you know, they're just playing smart, and we got chances late, but you got to be able to start games, and we got to continue to do that. I know it's tough knowing what what's ahead, but that should be the mindset of everybody, is that we play the same way no matter what the situation is. That's their mindset. That should be our mindset.
Is your sense that it's been tougher for the guys to get up for the road games?
It might be, but road games,
yeah,
or hockey games.
Road games, very recently at least. You know, the home games have been a little, it seems, better in terms of effort.
I don't know. I don't know about road games. I mean, I think overall, I think our guys have been much better in the last 5 games. Obviously tonight wasn't a good way to start the game. I mean, I know it's, as I said before, I know it's difficult to be in this situation, and knowing that there's 2 games and guys are, you just don't want them to relax into the games, and that's kind of how we did. We relaxed into the games, and, you know, they came out, we were standing still, we weren't defending, and, you know, they got their opportunities and capitalized.
And I guess you did James a favor. I mean, there was so much time and space for the opposing shooters here tonight in terms of getting their job done. You didn't seem to have much support.
We're standing still.
Yeah.
You know, like we were just standing, and they were skating, and they, you know, they dumped it in, and we early in the game did not. We did not get the puck in behind their D and work down in their offensive zone and work to get it back and keep offensive zone pressure. And, you know, early in the game, whether it was after another, one after another, and you knew that was a recipe for not for success. And, you know, we didn't check and we didn't work early in the game, and they got off to that greatly.
Any happy on Leo?
I guess he's fine. I mean, I think it was more precautionary than anything.
Were you skate these guys practice tomorrow or with 2 days off before the next game?
We haven't made a final decision, but right now we have practice tomorrow.
Is your decision colored by how this game played out? Does that factor in?
I think everything is factors in from the day before and how what the mindset is and so forth. I'll have a chance to talk with the other coaches and get a long plane ride home. That's going to make me think about a lot of things. So, you know, we'll make the best decision we think going forward. But right now we're definitely practicing.
Peter Horchuk, interesting comment. He first just kind of flippantly said, just road games? Team doesn't just get up from then?
Yeah, in general. Does it matter?
And then kind of covered a bit saying whether you needed to or not that they've just played better of late, period.
Well, they have. They've played better of late.
Yeah.
But again, can you believe this? No, really, really. With this talent that everybody keeps on reminding us of, that there are good players. There are talented players, which we do agree. But 8 road wins, the worst in the National Hockey League. Worse than Buffalo. Worse than Arizona. Worse than Edmonton. How do you feel now? Carolina. Okay? So there.
I know. Brutal. Brutal. You wanted to mention the road games. Let's talk about, not road games, but for the opposing teams.
Yeah,
teams.
We're setting up just basically the Eastern Conference and what it's all coming down to with the Bruin loss in Washington. And so we know that the Bruins and Sens are tied with 95 points. They both played 80 games. And yet Boston has more ROWs, regulation or overtime wins, than Ottawa. So they can't be tied when it comes down to points. Both Boston and Ottawa play tomorrow. Ottawa's in New York against the Rangers. And Boston plays in Florida. So that's going to be their second in back-to-back nights for the Bruins in Florida. And then Boston finishes its season on Saturday, of which all 30 teams are playing on Saturday. So Boston finishes in Tampa Bay. Ottawa finishes in Philly. Okay, so They got the Rangers and Philly. Now, you know, if anything happens tomorrow night with a Boston win and an Ottawa loss, that's it. The Bruins are in, right? Okay. Don't forget the Pittsburgh Penguins. They don't play tomorrow night. So conceivably, you know, things can still go right down to the nut and the wire. But the Islanders are in Pittsburgh on Friday night. And then Pittsburgh ends its season in Buffalo. So I think you like the Pittsburgh chance.
Yeah, right? Well, you would think. We'll come back. Terry Koshin will join us. We'll talk more about the season that was, the night that was. A 5-0 loss tonight for the Toronto Maple Leafs in Columbus against the Blue Jackets. You're listening to Leafs Nation Postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne, on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
The game is the meal. We're the after-dinner drinks. Pour yourself a cold one. Leafs Nation Postgame on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back. Leafs Nation Postgame brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sorry, I thought said there was a clip. He said no clip here. So that's why the dramatic pause there. But 5-0, the Leafs lose to the Columbus Blue Jackets. Terry Koshin will join us in a few minutes' time. He's in Columbus there covering the Leafs and the National Hockey League for the Toronto Sun newspapers. How you doing, Terry?
Oh, fine. How are you guys?
Well, we're good, but you know
what? What do you mean, fine? What does that mean?
No, the point is, Terry's fine.
Well, it's kind of raining out here, Ozzy.
Oh, I see.
But also, I think...
Maybe at Toronto, too. I don't know.
But it's raining here, but I imagine you're sitting there tonight in the press box going, wow, the Toronto Sun doesn't think very much of me on a night when the Jays are playing and the Raptors are playing and I'm in Columbus with the Maytag repairman. But you are valued, okay?
Thank you.
Now,
that didn't cross my mind that many other things did as I sat there and watched.
Okay, so just tell me stuff. Like talking to Peter Horchuk, for example. We were just saying it was interesting. Paul Hendrick asked him a question, and he about tough playing on the road. And he goes, what do you mean just on the road, kind of? And then he kind of backed in saying, well, actually, we played a bit better in general. I mean, do you get the feeling he's ready to be like Peter Finch in Network at one moment and just lose it?
Well, you know, I think I can't remember what game it was after, but, you know, the old give a crap meter line that he brought out to us guys. I mean, that of the games that I've covered post-game, that was when he was the most upset. Now, having said that, he's been some level of fairly livid after just about every game, you know, recently. I mean, there have been a couple there that they won, obviously, but it's I don't know, he's certainly at wit's end, and although he's never said it, I'm sure he's really, really happy that there's one game left to go in this. But having said that, you know what, guys? I mean, a lot of this has to go back to management and Brendan Shanahan. I mean, the Leafs were standings-wise doing fine or doing all right. Randy Carlyle was fired, and yes, there were some things. There were several, plenty of indicators that said that things wouldn't last the way that they were going. I understand that. But, you know, they missed big time thinking that Peter Horacek was going to right the ship defensively and set this team on its merry way and keep that playoff spot and secure it even more going down the stretch. A complete 180 of that has happened. The exact opposite has happened. And, you know, someone above Voracek has to wear that. We'll see if that happens or not.
Yeah, you know what? So, Terry, basically at the end of the day, a management is going to admit that they misread this team, this group of players way back mm-hmm. in January, because Randy Carlyle is looking like he's an absolute genius for what he's been able to, I guess, squeeze out of this particular group of players for mm-hmm. a couple of seasons. Getting into the playoffs, yeah, the ship veered to the left last year at the end. Started off well, trending in the downward direction in December, but yet this whole 5-5-5 style of play, the communication or the ability to communicate or be the nice guy behind the bench. I mean, look at how the players have responded to Peter Horacek as a result of what management basically said that Randy was too hard on him or worked them too hard.
Yeah, which I never quite understood. Yeah. I mean, a hockey coach is supposed to do those sorts of things and try to find ways to get his group going, although I've always had a hard time, you know, understanding the idea that, you know, guys doing what they're doing for a living need that much motivation. But certainly this is a group that, you know, not only required it, but never got it, never gave it to themselves. You know, here we were talking to David Clarkson this morning, and certainly, you know, one of the reasons why this team is where it is, although he's, you know, several weeks now removed from it, was because of the way he played. But, you know, he said to us, it's a great group of guys in there, still friends with them and everything, and went out to dinner last night with a bunch of them. But in the end, that doesn't matter. Who cares? I mean, these guys haven't even bothered to play for each other. I mean, they like everybody. They like themselves. No one wants to get traded. They like Peter Horacek. They like, you know, all this sort of crap that they keep spewing, and it's resulted in nothing. I mean, it couldn't be more hollow at this point. And, you know, it's got to be full steam ahead for, as I've said to you guys many a time now, it's got to be full steam ahead for changes. Here you have a Columbus Blue Jackets team that, you know, 500 plus man games lost to injury guys, which leads the NHL, and a lot of their integral players have been out for big stretches. I mean, the defenseman Ryan Murray, one of the better young ones in the game, he just played, one example, played in his 11th game tonight of the season. You know, basically, if you're a name player on Columbus, you've been out for any amount of stretch. And so what did they do? Did they fold the tent when all these guys were done? No, they've been getting healthy and put their noses to the grindstone and won 10 of 11 games. Leafs have not come anywhere near that type of resiliency, and they haven't even had half the injury trouble man game wise that the Blue Jackets have had. It's just a complete different outlook over there in that room, and you see it. I mean, the Blue Jackets would love for next season to be starting on Saturday. They're ready to go, and you know, summer for them is going to be very impatient and wanting to get back and get it going. And on the other hand, you have a Leaf team that has essentially resigned itself to the fact that, you know, they weren't going to be in the playoffs, so that was it. Weren't going to bother with this anymore, and they know that there will be big changes. I don't know. Like Phaneuf said tonight after the game, what more can you say, really?
Okay, here's a question I want to ask you. So, one is about, I've always found it strange that they really stress how much they love each other, this team. Well, maybe not love, but you know what I mean, which I find strange, because quite often when a team is losing and it's going down the tubes, Everyone always says nobody wants to be here. And the other one is about big changes are coming. Well, that's what Edmonton said. Edmonton's the only team that talked big about the culture, and they've done Bo Diddley. It's not that easy. So I'm waiting them. I'd love to see them. But I don't know if all those big changes are going to be coming. I mean, you may have to dump a couple of guys at below market value, but you're going to be stuck with some guys. And some of the guys you're stuck with should be the guys that hopefully thrive in a better environment. You really can't. It's tough to do wholesale changes given the contracts you have.
It is, but you have to think the management group is going to try everything in their power to get it done, right, Gord? I mean, it's just, you know, as difficult as it might seem, I think anything is possible. I mean, we've seen that in going back to Brian Burke unloading Jason Blake. And, you know, this year, I know it was extremely unusual circumstances, but even the idea that they could get rid of the David Clarkson contract was, you know, so crazy for most of us to even consider, but they got it done. Now, the thing is, I mean, you know, there's allegedly going to be this interest in Kessel and Phaneuf because there was the deadline, but, you know, 29 other teams or however many will be in the running for these guys have watched this all happen too and know that, you know, there hasn't been a lot of inspiring play from these people. And, you know, the whole change of senior idea is nice, but that doesn't always work either. And, you know, going back to what you're saying about it being difficult to move, for sure. But they're going to have to try. And are you going to get market value back? Probably not. But the bottom line is this group has had its time here, and they can't win. And, yeah, they love each other. Well, so what? Doesn't mean anything. They've had their opportunities, and management has to do what it can do to break it up.
Yeah, Terry, I want to get your thoughts and comment on, you know, one of the players that we have just talked about and discussed ad nauseum. But again, tying this together to this group that says, you know, they like each other, you know, inside the dress room, good chemistry and all that kind of stuff. Why don't you think that there have been times over the course of this season where they could have stood up for their captain and they chose not to? Like, Phil Kessel did it in a media rant against the media on behalf of Dion Phaneuf. But on the ice, why don't you think it's translated on the ice for this particular group? Is it a personnel? They don't have the guys, or they simply don't want to do it? Or do they not respect Dion Phaneuf, their captain, as much as they or we have led to believe that they are this close group?
Well, you'd think that has to be part of it, Ozzie, because if they did, then they would demonstrate as much on the ice, right?
Yep.
And like you say, even post-game or whatever, whenever it's been, there would be more of, you know, Kessel doing what he did down in Florida or whatever it was, you know, really something based off an inappropriate tweet that got his backup. But, yeah, like I said, off the top, it's a lot of it's hollow because you just wouldn't see the lack of effort, the lack of consistency if it wasn't. I mean, they're highly paid athletes. It's not like they're being thrown into this game for the first time and are unsure of themselves. They've all been doing it for a very long time, and they've all arrived at this place in the National Hockey League for very good reasons. And, you know, it's coming from the inside. It's just not there. And I don't know. It's the complacency is just ridiculous. I mean, you know, Burke, one thing he used to talk of was eradicating the blue and white disease. Well, that never happened. And it lives on. And, you know, what else could you point to other than what they are saying? You know, they're not backing it up. And so how much truth is there to it? You know, I don't expect them to come out and say, you know, we all hate each other in there and it's terrible and this sort of thing. But, you know, going so far to the other side and then not demonstrating as much, it certainly leaves you questioning a lot of it.
Well, as we all sit there questioning you in the rain, it's kind of like the Friends episode with Joey and Chandler, you know, in opposite rooms and that kind of stuff as the rain.
I think I missed that one.
I know. Well, I'll
never, never a Friends guy.
Okay. Well, right. You can identify. It's how we feel right now. Just opposite things, trying to reflect on the season that was. And I always appreciate you joining us. And we'll be doing the Saturday show for a while as well. And hopefully maybe you can come on from time to time. But thanks tonight. Have a good flight back. And we'll see what gives. It'll be an interesting week regardless off the ice right after it's all said and done.
Yeah, it will. Okay, thanks a lot for having me again, guys. Anytime.
Terry Koshin joining us from the Toronto Sun. and Sun newspapers covering the NHL and Toronto Maple Leafs. Interesting comments that he had. I keep looking for Steve Fellin. I wanted to get our road records and try to get him in context about the worst road record season. So I guess we'll talk about that on Friday as well. But interesting perspective Terry brings.
Well, absolutely, Gord. I think most of us would concur on lots of it over the course of this season. And yeah, you know, we've been deemed as, you know, the cause of a lot of things, being negative, being down on this management group. The list goes on and on and on. And
you're talking about us individually,
you know, just criticizing, I guess, just being at the point where
two guys who picked the Leafs to make the playoffs.
Yeah. We picked the Leafs to make the playoffs and that we're the ones that are, you know, criticizing and whining and complaining about a lot of things or our optics or whatever it is, but the record speaks for itself. You know, 8-27-6 on the road, hard work, which again, I kind of sometimes, and I was talking to a guy at the grocery store today on him almost laughing as though that we were applauding effort, like as though, you know, the participation badges arrived, you know, and everybody got a participation one. So they were able to actually give those out there for the week that was in the 3-1-1 week that they had or something like that.
Well, let's go back to the first day of training camp, first day on ice, or I'm trying to remember the first couple of days. But the first day they're actually on the ice and they have a ton of people there and they are very controlled environment, a fitness test and you name it, every kind of test, and you're skating an amount. And then there's all these people that quickly go and get a blood sample from you. So, I mean, they literally were looking for every edge. They were going in for the season for every edge to try to make a little bit of difference in learning about conditioning and all those other things.
Except for Phil.
Well, I guess not.
Right off the get-go.
Well, whatever. But, I mean, that's what I mean. So, on one sense, this is what you're showing as an organization. And then, really, as Peter Horchuk says, the give-a-bleep meter is just non-existent as for a lot of individuals for many games, for seemingly the whole team for a certain number of games. So, you know, that's a joke. So what's the point of taking their blood for that little thing if they don't give a crap? Mm-hmm. Like, if they don't, which... It's not just the losing the last little while, and I do understand losing gets to you and it beats you down. But like you say, then you're giving them the wiser salute for a little bit of effort.
You know what?
But keep going in circles.
But still, the common denominator for any successful organization, you know, starts with a group of players led by your leadership team that are willing to do the things necessary to win. And that's not just scoring goals. It's in all areas of the ice. It's along the boards. It's in your own end. It's defending. It's blocking shots. It's doing a lot of those things. Patrick Kane doesn't block shots. You know, we can make all of those comparisons, and yet he's got a captain there that when push comes to shove, that guy competes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So those are the intangibles. Those are the qualities. Those are leadership. Those are people that care about winning. And you know what? You know, enough said about it. We've beaten it down to death, and we're going to have one more opportunity, and then we'll have the postpartum.
Yeah, quick before we get a break, we're talking about Scott Hartnell. Who are some of the best chirpers against you that you actually got a kick out of? Good chirpers.
Oh, good chirpers. Garth Butcher was a good chirper.
Okay.
You know, he'd be right up there. Dallas Drake chirped pretty good.
Right.
Give me a moment to think. Okay. Think more about
that. We'll come back. Anyway, we will be back. We'll think about other things. We'll come back. I want to talk about the whole draft and all that with the Maple Leafs coming up. The onus, the thoughts about whoever this next prodigal son is going to be. We'll chat about them when we return. 5-0 loss to Columbus. This is Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Analysis and insight that you can't get anywhere else. Leafs Nation postgame with Gord Stelic and Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Welcome back to Leafs Nation postgame, brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers. Gord Stelic, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. And of course, we've been, what can I say? It's a moratorium looking back on 81 games, not just the loss tonight to the Columbus Blue Jackets. And Saturday, do you think the bounce back factor at all? We talked about it a bit earlier.
I don't know what you mentioned Detroit early in your career was a team that you ended on losing manner at the end. Do you think the give a bleep meter will be there on Saturday, or they play out the string?
Well, you know what? That's a wonderful question. I wish I could answer that. Based on leading up to tonight, you thought, wow, they actually had a goal of which Peter Horacek set for them, saying, boys, let's finish the last seven games on a bit of a high note. And for all intents and purposes, up until tonight, with their, 3-1-1 record in their last five games, it's been pretty good. And it was a spirited affair against the Ottawa Senators. That was a great game. The week before, the win against Tampa Bay. And so they were starting to pull things together at a time where you got to wonder if teams that came in to visit the Maple Leafs, like, were they even up for the games? And, you know, we're not going to make excuses for the opposing teams, but the effort tonight and now moving into Saturday night's game, as you did ask, Gord, is I wonder if some of them have flights out on Saturday night and they can't wait to get that game over as quickly as possible. I know I'm really kidding, but you'd think a game against the Montreal Canadiens, which might have some form of implications, at least for Montreal, where they sit in the standings, home ice advantage and all that kind of stuff. But you know what? This team is very dumbfounding to me, and I don't know what to say or how to predict what's going to happen on Saturday.
Well, a game like tonight, and again, as if they were winning, and you mentioned it listening to Montreal talk radio when you were there a number of weeks ago. I mean, the team had lost a game in a shootout and how critical they were about the selections of the players for the shootout. So, you know, you've got tonight, Columbus Blue Jackets are about as hot a team as there is in the NHL right now. So they're kind of the opposite of the Leafs. They're playing loose, fun, all cylinders going. Leafs, even though they played better of late, still hasn't been that way. And it seemed like the game was kind of okay for a while. And then the fragile state. I mean, what's the word for it? Can we give some amends or some sympathy or whatever the word may be for a Maple Leaf team showing just how fragile they were? Because when that first goal happened, but then also you have players kind of just having total brain cramps on some of the other goals.
You know, that's exactly what it really did appear. Because I thought, you know, for the better part of that first period, at least through 11 or so minutes, that it was like, wow, a spirited affair. These guys are actually have showed up for the game once again, and they're doing a good job to end their season. But I said this to you after the win against Ottawa, that, man, maybe this is a bad thing for them because they're going to go into the offseason feeling too good about themselves, and they need to be reminded of really where they're at. And sometimes you, I think, maybe play out the string, and it goes fairly well that – I think you forget about what happened for the first 75 or so games. Mm-hmm. And then you go into the summer like, not sure if these guys really understand the breadth of exactly what occurred for the entire season. You just feel good for yourself for the last couple of weeks, and it kind of masks exactly what went on. But anyways, yeah, you're talking about this fragile group, which, yeah, after that first goal, it was like, oh, my goodness. They just withdrew, and they started watching again. One-on-one battles, weren't interested, and the list went on and on, and then it just became an onslaught, which ended up being in the last, six minutes and 9 seconds, three goals. It was 3-0, and that was it.
You know, and again, how much are guys I write in the thing about guys not wanting to get hurt. Do you see that at all? The guys pull back a bit, or am I making too much about that? But it's kind of like those games, and when you want to get hurt, it's quite often when you do get hurt.
Well, you know what? I would say that, and apologies for that. I'm fighting something.
No problem, Oz. I wish the Leafs were showing your courage.
What was the question you asked me, by the way?
I talked about guys.
About worried about being hurt. Well, first of all, there's a couple of guys that have stood out to me, and I know you keep on going back to the fact is that for humanitarian purposes, We're giving Dion Phaneuf a bit of a mulligan here. We're giving him a pass all the way from when the trade deadline occurred and there was rumors about him getting traded that basically you now have felt sorry for Dion Phaneuf. And I could agree with you to a certain extent, but there comes a time where you can't just take up space and show no kind of effort wearing the C on your sweater like some of the guys that still did compete tonight. And I watch the third period, that rush by David Booth, going to the net hard from behind the net. And at least some of the guys appeared as though, you know, it meant something to them. There was some pride in it where Dion Phaneuf on the Hartnell goal in the first period was, I don't know where he went. He just decided to abandon the position of which, and he came over here to help for whatever reason, and Hartnell has a clear-cut lane right to the net. That was 3-0. In the third period, shorthanded, no effort by Dion Phaneuf, just turns the puck over, shorthanded, and Bernier makes a great save. But anyways, I think there's some players that just wish that Saturday was ready here.
Well, and in the case of Dion Phaneuf, I'm saying that as well, that I'm not cutting him a break. I'm just more, and I'm also, for humanitarian reasons, I think it's uncle from him as well. But if you're going to make moves, and let's face it, you want to change, as you should, the makeup of the team, the leadership of the team, he wears the C, so that means you got to change him. And I just think he's probably more than ready for it as well, without saying it. And
I would agree with you. He's ready. I think we're all ready.
Well,
it's done.
And he's also but of late, where I've given him some, cut him some slack, is he's the only guy, or maybe the only guy, with an interest in those kind of hits, with an interest in maybe even with a bad hand duking it out a little bit.
What do you mean an interest, Gord? He has that ability. He's got the size and the stature.
He doesn't do it too much. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying it's kind of like a backhanded compliment. I go to a Toronto Marty game last night against Adirondack, and I know it's the America. I know whatever. It's easier to do it in that environment or in the situation they have now. But you just see more of that has really evaporated from the Toronto Maple Leafs. Just evaporated.
Well, and you think of so I've been picking on Dion Phaneuf. Nazem Kadri. I've been picking on a lot of different guys.
No one's picking on anybody. Let's get that straight.
No, I am.
No, you're being critical of them. Oh, okay. That's not picking on somebody. As long as you're being objective and you back it up with what you,
no,
you know.
No, you're right. You're right, because I've already made up my mind on a number of players that, you know what, I'll comment, and I've made comments about Nazem Kadri when he's had good games and he's done some things well, but I think you know how I feel about him, and I'm not changing my mind. So there. No matter what. I can say the same. No, but Leo Komarov, for instance, you know, who, again, has not been the same player. And yet there have been periods of time during the last month or so where he's had some spirited shifts. At the beginning of the year, like every time he was on the ice, every shift, there was something that he was putting the fear in someone. Like, I mean, he was a man on a mission playing with some jam. And we were like going, wow. This is exactly what was missing last year. This is what the Leafs needed.
Yeah.
Getting a guy like Leo Komarov. Then he gets hurt, and then he comes back, and he's not been the same player. And
he was the same player when he came back from the first injury a bit, but that injury in Boston, he hasn't been anywhere close.
But, like, not anywhere near to being effective. And, you know, here's a guy in Europe that wore the C in one of his teams. Like, so you're thinking about, here's a team that's lacking leadership. Well, you know, where has Leo Komarov kind of gone, and why hasn't he had more of an effect on some of these other guys as a collective group? And we might be able to say the same thing for Stefan Robida, Eric Brewer, David Booth, any of the new guys that have come in from organizations where at least it's a breath of fresh air, because the main group here have been here for so long that they're used to this.
And to go back to Nazem Kadri's situation, it's interesting, having talked a lot about the 1980s now, and I mean before you came, that those were the worst years. When you were there, there were some up and down years. There were some good years, some tough years. And I do know that at that time, we, the organization, were guilty of not developing certain young players properly. Now, the good ones just developed anyway. Gary Lehman, Steve Thomas, you know, I still believe Wendell Clark, you know, they're the guys that are going to rise above it anyway. But other guys, it was legitimate criticism. And I'm trying to see where Nazem Kadri applies in this. And you look at him, and the guy talks like you would think him and John Tavares are dueling banjos when they're out there.
I know. You know what? I'm not sure you can even make that comparison. And the only reason why I strongly feel like, don't make the comparison.
So sorry, the comparison to the 80s?
To the 80s, or comparing some of those other players that you're talking about, the Gary Lehmans, the Wendells, you know, Russ Cortendahl, Stevie Thomas, whoever those type of players were that had some real upside based on where they were drafted and the skill set that they did have. And in hindsight, you look back, or you looked ahead and say, did they develop to becoming some of those players that you envision them being, whether it was with this organization or someone else?
Yeah.
You say absolutely yes.
In all cases,
okay,
yeah.
So Nazem Kadri, skill set could be equivalent, but the things that are working against Nazem Kadri for me in the comparison from what I've seen over these last, 5 years since he's been drafted here?
It's been a long time.
Okay, so a guy who feel, and I don't know if it's necessarily his fault, but he had no leadership for him to develop under. So he was mentored. Who's he been mentored by?
Well,
in this organization,
wait a second. He just got suspended by the team. So here he is in year five after he got drafted. And again, he's got to be accountable for it. But as you mentioned, mentoring or the leadership group, it was obviously absent if the Leafs thought they had to take this kind of bold measure.
No, absolutely. So what he's been able to do is get by on talent, much like Phil Kessel gets by on talent. But for Nazem Kadri, the documented aspects of him coming to camp, not really applying himself in the offseason, so being one of the guys near the bottom when it comes to his, you know, his conditioning. And so when you add all of that up now in year five, it's like, why? Well, why isn't he mature enough? But we're giving him the mulligan because of his skill set and his talent. And I hear people talking about it, and I even heard it today, again, saying if you had to pick a player who was the best player or the most consistent player for the Maple Leafs, I keep on hearing Nazem Kadri's name. Like, okay. So again, based on what he said last year when the thing fell apart, he said, well, some of us had good years. So what does that tell you about the character of the person?
Well,
like, and that's the thing that bothers me the most. And the comments that he says, it's like, and then he said this even last week, it says, we can't take anyone lightly. Like, really? You can't take anyone lightly? Well, I should hope you don't take anyone lightly because you're one of the teams that everybody else is taking lightly.
And then you talk about the environment for him. Look at Joffre Lupo. And in the case, different case, but what I mean is, here we talk about how horrible it is to play here in the city of Toronto. So all of a sudden you get a little bit of success. What's Joffre Lupo doing? Modeling a different suit every game. Fine. You know, that's fine.
You and I are shocked the way that Joffre Lupo has just disappeared.
Well, but then to say the line.
And the reason is?
Yeah, well, I don't know. But to say the line then, the modeling the suits, being popular, being the media darling, being the fans darling is fine. To say I can do things that I can do. What was the line again? I can do special things that most players can't do. I can do things.
When did he say that?
2 years ago. A line like that. So, okay, that's a lot to say. That's a lot to say about yourself. And certainly a lot of fans believed it. Be neat. He certainly showed games he could. He's got a contract, you know, based on the guy $5.25 million per season and 3 years left on it. So that kind of deal. And all I mean is he just disappeared. And I'm more saying about that same environment. As difficult as it's because the butts.
Yeah, so it's just very puzzling. It's puzzling. I don't understand it. I can't relate to it. It makes no sense based on what we were used to seeing, you know, from a player that we had so much hope for as far as projecting or showing a form of leadership that was really lacking in this organization. So when he came in here and played with passion, he was articulate. All of those types of things, the downside was all of the times in which he'd get hurt. Okay, now you fast forwarded to this year again, and how many years has Joffre Lupo been a part of this organization or been one of the core players? Like, he's been there for...
Like Kadri, about
I mean,
five.
Maybe not 5 years, but four of those.
Pretty close.
Okay, so pretty close. So to the point where he's either gotten fed up, at the same time, and... But the comments that he made about himself, I don't really have a problem with even some players articulating their self-confidence or their abilities or something out of the ordinary. And everybody kept giving Nazem Kadri that mulligan at the start of the year. You know, like he's a kid that has full of confidence, and that's just part of the makeup of the kid. So if he flaunts it, if he taunts it, as long as he backs it up, we're okay with that kind of stuff. Well, why aren't we saying that about Joffre Lupo? What has bothered you about Joffre Lupo that hasn't bothered you about Nazem Kadri? Like, please try to educate me on that.
Yeah, no, my point is in both cases, I'm just saying that this, who would want to play in Toronto is what I hear far too often. And if you don't want to play here, that's fine.
But Joffre has been too outspokenly
Your butt is kissed so much.
Right.
So much. I mean, even the Ottawa game, people were buzzing the next day about a win. That I'm just saying it gets carried away. It gets carried away.
Okay.
You're like a rock star for a team that's won one.
But whose fault is that? Whose fault is that? I think the media is a big part of it. So we're a part of that whole you know, shtick or whatever.
Well, the media feeds it feeds the
okay.
beast. And the beast is the insatiable appetite for
stuff. Okay, look what's happening here now with this whole Connor McDavid and this draft. Okay. And case in point, you know, our group that put on the game tonight, Rogers putting on the game. So, you know, with all due respect again, but we are there projecting. Here's who the Leafs are going to get if they draft fourth or fifth. And here's who Columbus is going to get where they draft. And so who have we already elevated? We keep on talking about Dylan Strome all the time now. The magnificent final game without Connor McDavid. You know what I mean? Like, we've put these guys on a pedestal they've even been drafted. And so the expectation, not only for the people here in this market of getting a good player, but we've far accelerated these kids beyond their ability, I think, to even develop into being that potential star player. That's not happening south of the border or some of these other places.
It happened with Jimmy Benning, with Gary Nyland. Well,
why isn't it happening in Montreal? Why isn't it not happening in Montreal? Why is it not happening in Vancouver or Calgary or any of those places? I don't hear these first-round guys. I don't hear Calgary talking about Sam Bennett to no end.
No, but you not think the same organization being the Leafs with a different general manager that featured Luke Shen ad nauseum on Leafs TV
Shen, Nazem Kadri.
Okay, but think now the Brendan Shanahan regime, this is who we're building around? Certainly the media members that seem to get a chance to talk to him, this is who we're building around. So this is not just media created. This is by the organization once again. Okay, and they're going to claim they're not going to rush a guy.
Well, I hope they're listening to this show and hope they're handling it a little bit different moving forward after this season's done.
I hope so, too.
You know, like in some kind of a smart, intelligent, wise, discerning way in the manner of which you go about building these young players.
There's a 90% chance you're going to pick fourth or worse. Okay, if somebody picking later than you wins the lottery.
Oh, wow, so instead of saying you're 10% to win the Connor McDavid.
No, but that's exactly it, Ozzie. And everyone's honing in on the 10. So if they do get the 10%, that's great. And you know what? He plays next year. I totally get it. But you're talking a 90% chance you're picking a blue-chip prospect. Prospect. P-R-O-S-P-E-C-T. Prospect. And I've been there through that crap where training camp comes. They did it with Nazem Kadri. I can remember Brian Burke talking about he's playing for the Marlies. Leafs are playing in Florida. And he says, no, Kadri's not coming up under any circumstances. They bleep the bed in Tampa. Who's there for the game in Florida 2 days later? Nazem Kadri. Same stuff.
Okay.
Same stuff.
Okay.
So anyway, I think that's a good way to discuss things about looking forward as we look back. That is a piece of the puzzle in getting better, in moving up, but it is not, it's not as big of the part of the puzzle a lot of people seem to think.
But there isn't a recipe then as we look at the incredible amount of parity in the National Hockey League. Today, as we're moving into the final few games of this season, moving ahead into the playoffs, is there a clear-cut favorite? Is there a handful of teams that you're going to bank on that says they're going to win the Stanley Cup, or this is the model on how to succeed to win a Stanley Cup? You know, because you go back to 2007, what was the model with Randy Carlyle and Brian Burke? It was an abrasive, aggressive, in-your-face, big, strong type of team, right? And since then, it's been Chicago, it's been Los Angeles, heavy set teams. But we don't know moving in this year who it could be. Like, look what the New York Rangers have done. What's their recipe of success? Like, all of a sudden, they were the surprise last year getting in the Cup final, and now they're the President's Trophy winner. And you look at some of their players who they are acquired. Look at the guys that they got through trades.
I know.
So anyways, there's a lot of different ways to build the team. Most people do seem to think that it is through developing your own core group of players, because still the core in New York are guys that have been drafted and groomed there.
Yeah.
And they've added,
same in
you know,
Chicago,
Nash, Boyle,
same in Los
Yandel,
Angeles.
You know, right?
Same in all those organizations,
yes.
Absolutely. So, and the other pieces with the salary cap world, you actually have a better chance. You have a better chance as far as getting it done sooner because of the salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
Where back in the 80s, you had a way better chance of making the playoffs because 16 out of 21 teams did. But everybody was locked up till age 33 and 31. Like that Edmonton Oilers and New York Islander regime, they were able to keep
it. Yeah, how are the Islanders doing now? Well, hey, things have cooled off. Ooh, gee, oh, I'm nervous now.
Well, this is the kind of stuff. We'll get to chat on Saturday.
Yep.
Of course, we'll be here with Hockey Nation on Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m. And we'll talk about, boy, the exciting playoff drives.
Dinner on you. Dinner on you.
Dinner's on me.
Yeah, yeah. Look forward to that.
It'll be good. Leafs will be taking on the Montreal Canadiens as well. Tonight, a 5-0 loss to the Columbus Blue Jackets. You've been listening to Leafs Nation postgame. Brought to you by your GTA Acura dealers, Gord Stelick, Mark Osborne on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.